So a couple of weeks ago when we left off, our short series that we began in Joseph, that first average Joe, right? And so in many ways, Joseph, we learned, was like you and I. He experienced both highs and lows in his life. He experienced both the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat as well. And although he was considered special by his dad, most other people would not have considered him much of any significance. You know, even still, as I read through the life of Joseph, I think there is something very significant about Joseph. And there's a piece of his life that just stands out that makes him not just an average dude, but a pretty significant, pretty special kind of guy. And that is how he handled both the adversity and the prosperity that he encountered in his life. That's what made Joseph really special. Now, when we left off last time, Joseph was sitting in an Egyptian jail, and he was accused of a very serious crime that he didn't commit. And this was after the fact that he had been thrown into a pit and then sold into slavery by his brothers who hated him, and they hated him just because he was special to his dad, and apparently also special to God. Now, you've heard of Murphy's Law, right? What can go wrong will go wrong, right? That's Murphy's Law that we call it here. Well, that sums up Joseph's life up to this point pretty well. And it seems like all the problems in Joseph's life began when he had a dream. Go back in Genesis to Genesis 37, and when we were back there, we read about how God came to Joseph in a dream, and he told him that he was going to raise Joseph up and told him that he was going to put him in place of authority and power above his brothers, above his family, even above his father. And that was pretty unheard of in those days. He was going to be in a position of unbelievable influence and power. Now, Joseph made the mistake of sharing that dream with his brothers, and they didn't really like that idea, that he was going to be raised up in position over them. He wasn't the oldest boy, and here he was bragging about how he was going to be in authority over them, even over his dad. And that was out there to say that in those days. And so that's when his problems really began. And he goes from being saved from being killed from one of his brothers to being sold into slavery. And then he worked his way up the ranks of his slave's household, and he was entrusted to manage this whole house. And then his master's wife tried to seduce him. And when he held her off and didn't submit to her, she lied and said that he raped her. And so he's thrown into prison. Now, up to this point, we'd probably call Joseph's life just kind of one long nightmare, right? But things are about to change for Joseph. What he saw in that dream as a young man was about to come true because of the dream of some other guys, actually. Dreams apparently are a big deal in Joseph's life. There are two men that Joseph was in prison with, and both of them used to be in the service of Pharaoh. And this Pharaoh, of course, ruled all of Egypt. One of these men had been Pharaoh's cupbearer. He brought him all his favorite drinks, right? And the other was a baker. And so these men were probably pretty close to Pharaoh. They knew what he liked and what he didn't like and what kind of a guy he was and all of that. But both of them are in this prison with Joseph. And they both have a dream. And they're certain that it's from God, but they can't make any sense of what their dream means. And so Joseph notices that they're all kind of distraught about that, and they're pretty upset. And so he approaches them and says, "Hey guys, what's going on? You look kind of down and upset. What's happening?" And so they proceed to tell him that they've had these dreams, but they can't understand them. And Joseph says, "You know what? You know, I'm not able to understand dreams either. I can't interpret them. But I do know the God who does know what your dreams are about. I do know the God who can interpret them for you. And so tell me your dreams." And they reluctantly begin to tell him what they had dreamt. And God, in his great faithfulness, gave the interpretation of those dreams to Joseph. He helped Joseph understand what those dreams meant to the cupbearer and to the baker. And so after listening to the cupbearer's dream, who had gone first, Joseph looks at him and says, "Hey, I've got some great news for you. You're actually going to be out of here. You're going to be out of jail. In 3 days, you're going to be out of here and hanging out with Pharaoh once again. When he raises your head up, he's actually going to restore you to your previous position of cupbearer. And you're going to be doing your cupbearer thing all over again. It's going to be great." And the cupbearer was pretty excited about that, right? That's pretty good news, from going to the prison to back to his old assignment. Up to that point, he'd been pretty worried that that he'd be dead in a few days. But now, not only will his life be spared, but he gets to go back to his old gig. It's great news. And Joseph saw the relief in his face and said, you know, I only ask one thing of you. When you get back there, when Pharaoh restores you to your position, would you mention me? Would you let him know who I am and what I did for you and how I'm managing things here in the prison? Just mention him. You don't have to try to sell me up. Just mention my name. Just tell him who I am. And so he asked that, and presumably the cupbearer acknowledges and says, yeah, I'll do that for you. Now it was the baker's turn. And the baker hadn't been the only one who was a little worried about what his sentence, what his dream meant, right? And he had been afraid too, this baker, that even more suffering was in store for him. And that he'd not only stay in prison longer, but that his life was actually in jeopardy. But here, Joseph had told the cupbearer that everything was going to be fine. So maybe everything will be fine for him too, he thinks. And so he has a little bit more courage. And he gets set up and says, Joseph, here's my dream. And when he was finished, Joseph said, well, I've got good news and I've got bad news for you. The good news is that in 3 days, you're going to be out of here too. But the bad news is that when Pharaoh raises your head up, he's going to put it in a noose and hang it from a tree. And that's where we pick up with Joseph this morning in Genesis 41. So if you want to turn to Genesis 41 and follow along with me, you'll be able to follow along a little quicker there. Genesis 41, we see yet again how big a part dreams are in the life of Joseph. Verse 1 says, after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed. You see, in those 2 years, when the cupbearer had been restored to his position, that cupbearer had not remembered Joseph. He didn't uphold his end of the deal, right? He didn't put in a good word for Joseph, even though he had been given that gift of relief from his fears. And so Joseph was nowhere on the mind of Pharaoh. Joseph wasn't even known by Pharaoh, right? That wasn't any of Pharaoh's concern. And can you imagine being in Joseph's spot after all he had gone through, and then being able to deliver such good news to a guy like the cupbearer, and then being forgotten again? Well, there's another piece of my life. That's pretty great. Awesome. But remember from last time, we saw time and time again, God was with Joseph. And he had good in mind for Joseph's life, and he was going to witness his own love through Joseph's life, right? Now, Joseph doesn't know it right now. He's probably feeling a little bit forgotten at the moment. But that moment in Joseph's life when he's about to have that great power and influence is about to come true. The big dreams that he had as a young man about his brothers and his father bowing to him, they were about to come true. Now, that may sound pretty great compared to what he's had to deal with since being sold into slavery, but the good life is not always what it's cracked up to be, believe it or not. You see, Joseph is about to face one of life's greatest challenges, and it's a challenge that is relevant to all of us here, at least in some way. Because in many ways, even those among us here this morning who struggle financially the most, we are living the dream. Essentially, we are living the dream. We are a wealthy, wealthy nation. I mean, if you made more than $1,500 last year, you made more money than half of the entire working age population of the world. That's something, right? We can make that as teenagers over the summer. If you made $15,000 last year, you made more than 88% of the working age population of the world. In many ways, we have more comforts and more wealth than Pharaoh did when he ruled an entire nation. When you think about the homes that we have, the cars we drive, the roads we drive on, all the technology that we have, it's amazing. We are living the dream. And we, too, learn something from the life of Joseph as he's living the dream, as his big dreams come true, because a life of wealth and ease can be just as dangerous and likely even more dangerous to us, to our spiritual health, than a life that is a meager existence, one of hard work. And so the reason for that is that it's easier to forget God in the good times than it is to remember God in the bad times. It's easier to forget God in the good times than it is to remember God in the bad times. It just is. I don't know why that is, but it is. I mean, you guys have seen the results of these things, right? I know that wealth and ease do some pretty crazy things to us people. You look at some of the lives that really wealthy, uber wealthy people live, and it's kind of out there sometimes, right? I also know a lot of examples of people who had to work hard all their lives just to scrape by, and yet they were awesome people, fulfilled, joyful, happy. You see, one of the things that made Joseph extraordinary is that he was the same when he had everything as when he had nothing. We're going to see that Joseph, who was focused on God in the prison, remained focused on God when he went to the palace. How did he do it? Well, he remembered a few things, and he lived by some things that helped him keep that focus no matter what his life circumstances were. And the first thing that he remembered is that I am who I am because of God. I am who I am because of God. We're told in Genesis 41 that Pharaoh, the ruler of Egypt, has this dream. And it says, after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump. And they fed on the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. So here are these 7 really large, attractive cows, and then 7 skinny, ugly cows. And the skinny, ugly cows eat up the 7 large cows. And Pharaoh has no idea what to do with that dream. He has no idea what that means. And can you blame him? I mean, underdog cannibalistic cows are not really a natural storyline that we'd like to think about. I've never had a dream like that. Have you had a dream like that? No. Maybe there's one guy in this room that's dreamt about cows. I don't know. But not this guy. I don't know. But for some reason, Pharaoh just couldn't write this thing off like he had eaten some bad anchovies on his pizza the night before. He couldn't get it out of his mind, right? Those skinny, ugly cows that ate the big, plump, attractive cows, they were eating at him. He knew that it meant something important. He knew it was important to his life, but he just didn't know why. And so he calls together all of his magicians, all of his scholars, all of his wise men, and he asks them to figure it out. What does this thing mean? But they got nothing. Bupkis, right? None of them could figure it out either. It looked like Pharaoh was at a dead end. And so he was all at his wit's end, and he couldn't figure it out until this happened. In verse 9, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted it to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Finally, right? The cupbearer finally figures it out. Oh, yeah, there's a Joseph guy. And he remembers Joseph, and he suggests that, you know, Pharaoh, maybe this guy would be an option to help you figure out your dream. And we might think, you know, yeah, it's probably a little late at this point. Pharaoh's probably done with just about everybody. But God's timing is perfect. It's perfect. And at this point, Pharaoh is ready to try anything, you know. And maybe yesterday, Pharaoh wouldn't have given this slave guy in jail the time of day. But today, he's ready to listen to Joseph and whatever he has to say, because he feels he has no other option now. And so Pharaoh says in verse 14, or Pharaoh went and sent and called for Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. This is it. This is the moment, right? He doesn't know it yet, but this is the moment when Joseph's big dreams were about to come true. As soon as he's cleaned up and he's made presentable, he's brought before Pharaoh, the most powerful man in all of Egypt. And the most powerful man in all of Egypt now is looking at this average Joe, this guy who spent nearly half of his life in prison and in slavery, and asks him, can you interpret my dream? Can you interpret my dream? This is a really incredible scene. Don't miss all that's going on here. See, a pagan ruler has a dream from a God who he doesn't even believe in, right? And Joseph, who had a dream from the God who he did believe in, was given this interpretation of Pharaoh's dream. And he was only given the chance to come in and tell the interpretation because of another dream that another guy had 2 years earlier, who never would have even met Joseph if they hadn't been in prison together at the same time. Now, some people might call that coincidence, or maybe karma is finally catching up with Joseph's life, and because he has had so many bad things happening to his life, you know, and he finally deserves some of the good things. But we know better, right? We know that coincidence and karma are real. They're not really the causes of anything in life. What was happening here was providence. It was God's providence. And so Joseph finds himself face to face with likely his one and only shot at getting out of prison. And maybe you've been in a similar situation. I don't know, maybe it didn't have anything to do with prison, but we've all had those opportunities in our life where we've been face to face with a once in a lifetime opportunity, right? A big, huge opportunity in front of us. Maybe it wasn't an alternative to jail, but maybe most of us at some point have had a decision to make or an opportunity before us that was just, it would make a big difference in our lives. And maybe it's a big promotion at work, or maybe it's just a chance to land a big account. Maybe it's a marriage proposal. Maybe it's a school decision. I don't know. But we've all had big opportunities before our lives at some point. And if you're like me, you've noticed something when it comes to people who come face to face with really huge opportunities, really, really major life decisions like that. And that is that people go for it maybe a little bit more often than they should. They roll the dice maybe a little more often than they should, right? I mean, it happens. Something happens when we see the possibilities before us, the immense grandeur that might happen if we just get that perfect dice roll. Right? We sort of get this tunnel vision and we can only see the good things that are going to come out of this. Even if we don't get what we think we're going to win, we'll think, well, you know, the worst that can happen is this. And we just miss out on what actually might happen. Even in failure, we're able to block out anything that might look like a negative result. We overestimate our abilities. We overestimate our odds at being successful. And we underestimate our chances of losing. We even underestimate the negative consequences of winning. We don't even know what those might look like because we only see the good things when we're face to face with a huge opportunity. It happens. That's why Americans spent over $70 billion in lotto tickets in 2014. $70 billion. That's an average of $300 for every adult in states where lotto tickets are available to be sold. And you know not everybody plays the lotto, right? So an average of $300 for every adult. That's why, hypothetically, a college guy on spring break who could get got on the Price is Right would win the bid for a washer and dryer to get on stage, then do so badly at the pricing game that he sets himself up for like a 1 in 50 shot at winning a car, and he still goes for the car, right, instead of taking the $1,500, hypothetically. I don't know if you know anybody like that or if you're looking at him right now, but that could happen. We just overestimate our odds of winning. We do, in the heat of the moment especially. But it's true. For some reason, big opportunities make our egos big for some reason, right? When Joseph is faced with this big opportunity, Pharaoh looks him in the eye and says, "Can you interpret my dream?" What's he going to say? "Yes, of course I can. I can do that," right? Absolutely. I can take care of that, no problem. Right? He'd be a fool not to say that. He'd be a dead man either way, right? And so even if he has to lie and come up with an interpretation that's later not found to be true, he's no worse off. He has to say yes. But that's not what he says, is it? He doesn't say, "Yes, I can do that." In fact, he says something that only an idiot who wants to blow his only shot would say. He says, "It's not in me. I can't do it. I don't have that knowledge. I can't do what you need me to do. I don't know what your dream means." Now, I would have loved to have seen Pharaoh's face in that moment because Pharaoh's probably not a dumb guy. He knows that no matter who he brings up is going to say, "Of course I can." Because if he says no, he's going to be run off no matter what, right? But he says, "I can't do it." I mean, he had to think at least that he would try to fake it, but that isn't who Joseph is. Joseph has lived his life in an upright manner, an honoring God manner all this far, and he's not about to change at this moment. He totally doesn't want to stop that. But he doesn't completely blow his shot. He wanted to just be sure that he gave God the proper credit so that people would hear that it's God that is doing this and not Joseph, right? That it's God that has the power to interpret and tell what these dreams mean and not Joseph that has some mysterious magician powers or something like that. And so he goes on to say, "It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Joseph knew that it wasn't anything he had done that that was the reason why he was standing in front of the most powerful man in Egypt, right? This wasn't because of who he was, that it was because of who God was that he was standing there. He made sure he directed his focus to the God that was in him, the God that was with him at the time. You see, Joseph understood something. He said, I am who I am because of the providence of God, not because of who I am or what I've done or how smart I am. And when it matters most, Joseph did not forget the God who had not forgotten him. And he was right. We are who we are because of the providence of God. Now, we may like parts of who we are better than we like other parts of who we are, right? I mean, I'm sure being in Joseph's shoes and getting so much bad stuff happening to him that he didn't deserve caused him to maybe dislike some parts of how God made him to be. That God made every bit of us, the whole thing, the parts we like and the parts we don't like. And he made us on purpose and he made us for a purpose. And Joseph's life, even those rotten parts that led up to this moment, were on purpose. And Joseph's life, even those rotten parts that led up to this moment, were for a purpose as well. They were on purpose and they were for a purpose. God made you who you are on purpose and for a purpose. God did it. And Joseph got that. He understood that very well. He got that he was who he was because of God. And he also got, number two, that he was where he was. He was where he was because of God. That begins to lean in more into that purpose thing, right? The purpose portion of God making us. Joseph goes on and tells Pharaoh the interpretation of the dream that he's had. The seven big, plump, attractive cows represent 7 years of plenty that are coming for Egypt. See, the Nile is going to flood just perfectly like it's supposed to, and then drain, and the land is going to be real fertile, and you're going to have an abundant portion of crops. You're going to be all kinds of food growing. And then the seven lean, ugly cows are going to represent 7 years of famine that will come after those 7 years of plenty. And so the Nile is either going to flood and stay in flood stage, or it's not going to flood at all. And so they won't be able to grow anything. And the food will be scarce. And it'll be a hard time. And so he advises Pharaoh to be a good steward of those first 7 years of plenty in order to be prepared to ride out those 7 years of famine. Don't use up everything in those years of plenty, he says to Pharaoh. It'll be tempting to indulge, but don't do it. Be wise and live through many, many more years. And for Joseph, this was not a hunch. It wasn't a guess. It wasn't a, I hope this happens. It was prophecy. It was special knowledge of the future given from God, and it was going to come true. And not only did Joseph tell Pharaoh what was going to happen, what the dream meant, right? But he also told Pharaoh why he was sure these things were going to happen. He says in verse 32, and the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God. God will surely, shortly bring it about. Pharaoh had not just one dream, but two dreams, you see. He had this dream about the cows, but he also had a second dream about corn, and it was very similar. And Joseph said that these are two dreams, they mean the same thing. And the fact that you were told it twice means that God has made his mind up. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen pretty soon. And then Joseph, like a good preacher, moves from interpretation to life application, right? He starts giving Pharaoh advice about what to do about all this. He says, now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. And then he goes on and gives Pharaoh a step-by-step plan of how to get ready for what is about to happen. Now, there are some amazing scenes in Joseph's life, so many of them, and this is one of them right here. I mean, here he is, this young foreigner slave who just 30 minutes earlier was cleaning out the prison lagoon, right? And now here he is giving the most powerful man in Egypt advice on what to do with his land, with his country. I bet all those advisors to Pharaoh were probably thinking, you know, just who does this guy think he is? It's one thing to come here and try to have a shot at a lie about what he thinks his dream is meaning from Pharaoh, but it's another thing to tell him what to do about it. He's getting a little big for his britches here, I think. I think Pharaoh's probably going to crush him, is probably what they're looking at. But Pharaoh doesn't crush him, does he? Instead, he says, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all of his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all of this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards to the throne will I be greater than you. Wow. This is a ridiculous change from being in prison, right? Huge change. And notice that Joseph didn't promote himself in any of this. That thought probably hadn't even crossed his mind. Maybe it was a hope, I don't know. But when you're in that position in prison, you probably don't think you have even a shot at something like that. He was likely as amazed as everyone else when, after he told Pharaoh that he needed someone that he could trust to order his land manage his land very well, that Pharaoh told him, you know what, you're right. Yeah, you are right. I do need someone to run my storehouses, and I need someone to help manage my entire country. But here you are. You're an imprisoned slave that I've known for about 20 minutes. You're hired. He was probably just as surprised as everybody else, wasn't he? That kind of thing just didn't happen. It doesn't happen today either, it doesn't seem like. Never before in history at this moment had someone been promoted from such a low position to such a high position in such a short order of time. But God is powerful, and he had orchestrated this entire thing. So now it's becoming clear to Joseph. Even though his brothers had thrown him into the pit, and even though Potiphar had thrown him into prison, God used those circumstances to bring about his will in Joseph's life. Remember, God's will for Joseph's life began far before any of this stuff even happened, even before he was thrown into the pit, right? He had that dream where he would rise above his brothers and his family and authority, even above his own father, right? He had that dream long before any of this stuff. And so Joseph began to see now, even in his own circumstances, that he was who he was because of God, and he was where he was because of God. And he could see that because he knew and trusted all along, number three, that he had what he had because of God. He had what he had because of God. Everything we have belongs to God. We're simply stewards of what God has given to us, over what he's entrusted to us. And that's a really contrary idea, isn't it, in our society, to the kind of the me first, I get mine, everyone else is important too, right after me kind of attitude that is the American dream. All his life, he could have struggled with anger and bitterness towards God over that, over the rotten life and circumstances that he's been given. Now, it never says he struggled with that. So if he did, it didn't win him over at all. If he struggled with it at all, he trusted God in the end when he made his decisions. Every time, he trusted God. His faith always won out. But now here he is, second in command in all of Egypt, but really only second by title. He's actually the one calling the shots, isn't he? He's the one that's in control. He's the one that makes what happens happen. And Pharaoh said, you know, you just make the shots, and I get all the glory, but you call the shots. So only by name is he in second. But he's actually the one calling the shots. He's got a chauffeur. He's got political connections. He's got a huge salary. He's living in a mansion. He's got more clothes than he could ever wear. He's got the best food to eat. I mean, this guy is living it. I mean, he had just crazy amounts of change from being in prison to what he's doing now. And we all know what happens to people when they get a lot of wealth really, really quickly, right? He was given even this a beautiful Egyptian wife who was the daughter of one of the most important priests in the nation. And so it would be easy for Joseph at this point to not only forget who he was and where he was, but also to forget the God who was responsible for it all. He could do that really easily. A lot of people do that. But also, there's a spiritual danger in being poor, being angry at God for the lot that we get in life. But there's also a spiritual danger in being rich, and that is feeling like we don't need God. And we struggle with that in America real bad. Because of his actions here, and when his life was a wreck, we don't have any doubt that Joseph loved God then, right? We know what happened then. We know his responses. We know that Joseph loved God then. And if we're wondering if his newfound wealth have changed him at all, we find the answer right here in verse 50 that says, before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he has said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. The second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So Joseph has these two boys to his Egyptian wife, and he gives them Hebrew names. Manasseh, the firstborn, means forget your trouble, and Ephraim means fruitful, right? The love and faithfulness God had been shown showing to Joseph over all his life made him forget all the bad things that had been done to him throughout his life by all the people that had done those things. And he did that. He was able to forget that because all the good that God brought out of his life. Joseph was starting to see the picture come true. Now, Joseph named these boys the way he did, both to be a reminder to himself and a witness to others that he was who he was, he was where he was, and he had what he had because God was with him. He didn't let his problems cause him to reject God, and he didn't let his prosperity cause him to forget God either. Joseph knew a simple, deep truth that I think if we understood the way he understood it, our lives would be changed dramatically because we would see the world in a completely different light. And we can hear him say and repeat the truth, this simple truth that he understands in verse 51 and 52. Listen again and see if you can hear what it is. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for, he said, God has made me forget all my hardships and all my father's house. The name of the second child he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Did you hear what he said in there? God has made me, for God has made me. Joseph understood that he wasn't a self-made man. In fact, he knew that there was no such thing that existed. He knew the truth. He was a God-made man. God made him everything he was. Do you believe that? Do you believe that with your life? Do you believe that with all you have, that everything you have in your life comes from God? Everything, your job, your spouse, your singleness, your kids, your connections, your money, your family, everything you have comes from God. Do you believe that deep in your soul? Now, here's a harder question, because we would like to say yes to that, of course. What in your life demonstrates that belief? Or are there things in your life that maybe demonstrate a lack of belief in that? Are you angry about the life that God has given you, or do you humbly and quietly trust that he's working all things for your good? If you're not angry, have you forgotten God, that he has given you everything, made you everything, who you are, what you are, and where you are? Maybe you've taken some of the credit with your hard work and smarts and ingenuity. This stuff isn't easy. Joseph made it look easy because of how his actions and what his response was to both his poor and his prosperous times. I mean, he made it look easy because he had a life that was ridiculously rotten, and yet he chose God. And he made it look easy because his life was ridiculously prosperous, and yet he chose God. He made it look easy, but it's not easy. It's not easy for sinful, prideful, jealous people like you and I to live in that reality. That God made me everything. Everything. But it's the truth. And when we really grasp that in our head and in our hearts, I believe there's no telling what God will do in and through us. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we do thank you that you are in control. We thank you that we don't have to rely on ourselves. But too often, Lord, we do. We look at our situation and we're upset because it's not as good as somebody else's. Or we enjoy our situation so much that we forget to give you the credit you deserve for it. Forgive us, Father, for those things. Restore our hearts to point directly towards you, the giver of life, the giver of everything that we have. Help us to acknowledge that not only in our own hearts and minds, but to the world around us, like Joseph did. And he made absolutely certain that there was no question who he was saying was in control, who it was that was doing what was going on in his life. Help us to direct our lives in that way towards you. In Jesus' name.